You're listening to the Star Wars Report, episode 73. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/Star Wars Report. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/Star Wars Report. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Star Wars Report. I'm so glad that you've decided to join us for episode 73 as we truck on towards what will probably be just short of 75 episodes by the new year. We hope you're having a fantastic holiday season. I'm your host for this evening, Riley Blanton, the founder, the brain behind, the guy whose fault it is. I'm Riley Blanton, and with me as always are my fellow co-hosts, Bethany Blanton.
Hey everyone.
And Mr. Mark Earlman.
Hey, hey, hey! Founding away!
Mark, how you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing okay. A lot's been happening over here in my end of the world since we talked last. I got the bookshelf back up. It's now up on milk crates.
I saw that.
Yeah, got all my Marvel, or not Marvel, wow! Oh my gosh, I'm already so worried about Dark Horse losing to Marvel that I'm calling the Dark Horse figures Marvel figures.
Slip.
I got all my Dark Horse figures. The two-packs are out. I found that box while I was going through all my stuff and put them up on the shelf. And I'm just so glad to get that back to normal. I was at a point where I wasn't even going out in the garage. I would literally guerrilla style record with you guys that those few times that we did it with just stuff like all around me. And man, then I got out of here so fast because I had towels soaking up water. It was just depressing. You know, just knowing my collection was safe, but everything else was in danger.
What is the status of the Kamino, of the Dagobah?
Well, at the moment, nothing more has been fixed. They had a plumber, the landlord sent out a plumber, and he put a rubber dam inside one of the back spouts where the water comes up from the ground from the gutter at the back door to kind of stop that. But it's still leaking, but luckily in a torrential rain for 5 days, it didn't leak enough to come through the door. And then they discovered that when they ran a camera down the line, that one of the gutter lines has collapsed. And so every time it rains really hard, the water just backs up and starts flooding on the ground. And my garage is actually sitting a foot underneath the rest of the ground where I'm at. And so once the water gets saturated, I mean, once the ground gets so waterlogged and saturated, it literally seeps up through the floor. And so what I did on the outside is I drilled holes along the side underneath the gutter and put coffee cup screws, the little hooks, all along it and hung four big tarps going from underneath the gutters because the wood's rotted. So the water doesn't even get to the gutters. It leaks behind them. So I've got all that water getting caught and directed out and away from the dirt, and it goes out onto the concrete. And I'd say by the third day of the nonstop rain, once I did that, it stopped leaking in. I mean, it looks really bad on the outside, but everything on the inside's dry. And keep in mind, my actual physical stuff was for the most part okay. I had a couple boxes that I didn't have shelves up for them yet.
Yeah.
And so those things, like my posters, the Star Wars posters and the Spider-Man posters, the cases they were in got wet, and one of the Spider-Man posters started to get damaged in one corner, but I literally walked in as it was pretty much happening. Everything else, it was the wood, the bookshelf was, you know, the bookshelf was made of wood and the wood was sitting in the water and stuff like that. And it would literally just pool, and then, you know, that pool would kind of leach out and go across. And then my desk is made of press wood. And so when it was sitting in the water, I was like, oh man, this isn't good. So I still have to get that up off the ground. And I got two recliners out here that I'm going to get some pallets and build little floors for those to set them on. So basically, if it does rain and I have standing water, everything's above the water line. I mean, it's not much.
So literally,
it hasn't
I've
got
seen
more
the
than
pictures.
A half inch.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures, Mark, and it's like you have these crates, cinder block style crates that you've set your bookshelves on to protect your Star Wars collection. Which, by the way, begs the remarkable. Let's pause for a moment and think on this. Your garage is essentially your studio. Can I call it maybe like a man cave of sorts?
That's in a sense. Yeah, it is my man cave. The funny thing is right next to it, it's got a shed built off the side. So my flatmate, he has that. He calls his the lair. Mine's Rogue Studios.
So in this sanctum of the illogical ones, Geek Castle, you have been threatened by floodwaters, and I love the fact that most people, I don't know this, but I like to think that most people would probably, all right, that's it. I'm sorry. We got to box everything up. The room's gone. You got to let it, nothing valuable can go in there. It floods. But I like the fact that the past 5 minutes of the opening of the show, you have thoroughly described the way you have used, very innovatively, used a combination of, all I heard was combination of tarp, hooks, running water, and cinder blocks and raised things. And by golly, you have your studio and it's still there.
Yeah. All I've lost is one shelf where my hardcover books were able to stand up. Because, you know, keep in mind, my bookshelf's been small, only paperbacks fit. Now it literally goes to the next shelf up. But the upside is when you look at it now with the Dark Horse comic two packs and stuff, it looks like it's a solid wall. You don't realize that it's an unfinished wall. So that there is a nice turnout of it. And the milk crates were actually so long that the extra wood from my bookshelf that would normally go on top sits on those as an extra shelf. That's where I've got R2 sitting and a bunch of my other stuff. So, I mean, it's one of those interesting things. And that's how this has been progressing out here. Like, I started out with a small square, and then it got a little bit bigger. And till now, I've got over half the garage kind of taken up. But yeah, when we rented this place, the garage was a selling feature because I had all my stuff, and it's been in, you know, I've had a very small segment of my collection in my studio, which had been in my room for a while. And
sure, yeah. Yeah, that was those days.
Yeah, that was getting that out and getting all my stuff out of storage and saving that extra $120 a month was the big reason why we picked this place. And then to find out that it was leaking, we were really mad. You know, it's like, hey, we've got, you know, a lot of stuff out there in the garage that's, you know, but so far the tarps seem to be working. And, you know, I'm one of those hell or high water. And in this case, the high water was getting kind of high and I was really getting scared, but I wasn't about to turn and box it up. I mean, I did get close. I asked my wife if she thought I should. And she's like, no. So if anything, we'll get it up off the ground. She's like, but you've had your stuff put away for too long. So that was really cool to have that support.
Yeah, yeah, well, and I like the determination and the creativity. And man, you got to take me out of suspense. I got to see the studio now. If you have a webcam up, of course the audio listeners won't know, but yeah, you should throw up the video. I'd love to see you in the studio while we continue podcasting. Not to throw you on the spot or anything like that. Oh, look at that! Already loading up video. The man's a trained ape. He knows exactly how to do all this fancy schmancy technology stuff. There we go. All right.
All I got to do is switch cameras now.
Well, on the podcast today for you guys, we've got really two main stories and some feedback. I got a decent amount of feedback about the score last week, and we'll come to that in the second half of the show. But I'll tell you what, I'm surprised by how much how much people reacted to the score part of the episode. It's really something that I think has not touched a nerve, but it's certainly something that people are very passionate about, and something that I did not see coming, because I kind of thought it was only us, Mark, that were this crazy about the music. But I got a lot of feedback. We'll put it that way. A lot of feedback, and we got some emails coming up about that. But before that, I wanted to feature an article. I heard great discussion on this particular topic on the Anatco Almanac. That's over at the 5x5 Podcast Network. You guys can check that out. But so I want to give due credit where due credit is due. Did I mention due?
Do it!
this kind of made waves, and I think this is relevant to Star Wars, but I'm a fan of the fan fiction. Are you a fan of the fan fiction, Mark?
Yes and no. I think the hard part with me in fan fiction is there are definite diamonds in the rough. I just don't like wading through the rough to get to them.
It is. Fanfiction.net with the Star Wars section, man, it's like 2 million stories. It's insane. So, but anyway, so there's a feature, Io9, I saw this and it was very interesting, I just think from the point of the fan community aspect of things. Io9 had an article put up by, Anna Lee Newitz, and she says, why we decided to stop publishing Fan Fiction Friday. And so for you guys who aren't familiar with it, I'm just gonna read, a portion of this particular blog post and then throw that up for discussion, guys, before we move on to Clone Wars discussion and score discussion after that. But She says, over the past 2 weeks, IO9 has been running new installments of Rob Brickman's Fanfiction Friday, which he brought over from his previous blog, Topless Robot. It's a column where Rob finds a piece of over-the-top fanfic and makes fun of it, mystery science theater style. It is intended as a self-parody, a fan making fun of fandom, but that is not how you perceived it. A massive outpouring of emails, comments, and tweets from you have made us realize that it's not simply not going to work on IO9. We are going to discontinue running it, and here are the factors that swayed our decision. So this is where it gets interesting, because this is a behavior that I see that frustrates me more than anything else in the in fandom, and it's neat to see a mainstream site like IO9 address this. That wasn't the article; that was me. What might you ask makes Fanfiction Friday different from many other calls on IO9, where we mock everything from the latest True Blood episode to the various trends in science fiction or futurist thought? We're not exactly allergic to satire, in fact, and we do get criticized for our long rants all the time, so why keep running those but not Fanfiction Friday? Picking on the little guy, that's what this section is called. The difference is that people who write fanfiction are amateurs, writing mostly for themselves or for a small group of friends who are not soliciting publicity or attention. They're not pretentious either, and they're not trying to claim that their work is a great work of literature. It's just fun. And they go on into greater detail about why, you know, picking on the... It does seem to kind of be picking on the little guy.
Well, they make the argument that basically if you're a fan fiction author, you may have a couple hundred followers on Twitter,
tops, yeah,
but you're not going to have the social media power of some much
sure.
larger platform,
sure.
whether you're George Lucas or Michael Bay.
Yeah, it goes on to say, a context, context, content, text. I think what made so many of us fans of Fanfiction Friday when it ran on Topless Robot was the fact that it was written by a fan for a fan site, and it was not the only article about fandom that appeared on it regularly. Therefore, it wasn't the only representation of fandom that readers would see. On IO9, however, we cover many topics from science, art, futurism, et cetera, that's kind of inside baseball. But basically, in the context of it, it kind of is, it's more raw and more direct.
Well, it's one of the only regular articles on
that covers that fan fiction at all, yeah,
or fandom in general.
Yeah, yeah,
Fandom. I have that's a weird one for me in the context that they're using it.
Yeah.
I mean, we use fandom to talk about Star Wars fandom. I use fandom
sure.
when I'm talking about Marvel to talk about Marvel fandom. But to me, they're different fandoms. I mean, I don't ever try to call all fandom one fandom. That just seems ludicrous to me, because I would not want to be chalked up with a bunch of fandom fans for Twilight. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, that's not my fandom.
Well, and in summary, I'll go ahead and finish this up. Choosing to discontinue Fanfiction Friday was one of the toughest decisions I've made in my time as editor-in-chief at IO9. I love to watch Rob's insane humor in action, and Fanfiction Friday is really hilarious. I am also a fan of erotic fanfic, which is often what they make fun of, something very popular right now. And he goes on to say, there are many examples of awful writing and terribly conceived stories left for us to make fun of, so don't worry that we're going soft. We're going to continue smashing the faces of the big guys and make fun of ideas, and we're going to leave all of you alone, unless you are Michael Bay, in which case, bleep.
No,
wow, they stayed so clean until the end. I didn't see that coming. So I had not actually. I'd skimmed the article, but I heard the commentary more in depth on as I mentioned, Andy Notko's Notko Almanac, and he talked about it, because it's interesting. We live in a time where anyone can publish anything, and we live in a time where it's much more public. So if little Johnny wants to write something, usually the habit, especially of people from my generation, is to share that immediately. And that takes some level of courage. And
yes.
anyone who's trying to be creative on the internet, you know, they're in a minority. Most people are kind
of... The trolls! They're coming!
Huh?
Sorry.
I missed the context. Are you talking about what I was just saying?
I was
talking about when you put something online, you just know that they're going to be some trolls.
Yeah,
that come out of the woodwork somewhere.
You're too caught up in Lord of the Rings. You're like, what's this have to do with The Hobbit?
Well played, sir. Yeah. Well played, which is where I wish I would be in a couple hours for the midnight showing. We're recording this on Thursday the 13th, so the midnight premiere is tonight, and I'm not going, and I'm sad. We'll get to that.
I just want to say real fast, sure. I understand what the article's coming from. I guess I have an issue with how it almost is saying, like, okay, fan fiction writers are so sensitive that we need to lay off of them. But hey, everybody that's made money off of their books, well, they're all pretentious. They're all out there claiming that their work is great literature. When was the last time you remember hearing Timothy Zahn say, hey, come read my book because it's great literature? I mean, that's the publishing side doing that. And I think that a lot of these authors are getting targets on them just as much because of what the publishing companies are doing. You know, and I mean, I get what they're saying, but it's like, to me, it's like, okay, once you've posted your fan fiction online for the world to see, www, hey, hello, wake up people, World Wide Web. If you're not ready to share that with the world and take the criticism, to me, that's, then don't post it. I mean, you post it online, you put yourself at risk for specifically that, for people to mock you, because people have fun mocking the heck out of things.
Yes, and that's a choice, and I think that's why IO9 made the decision that as one of the biggest websites that cover science fiction, period, IO9 decided that that was not a good use of their platform.
Well, and think of it this way: say I am fan fiction writer Vicky. And I have just written...
Vicky 404. You should make some kind of...
Oh, Vicky 404. Okay, that works better. Why did you give me a dead end? I mean, 404, really? Okay, but Vicky 404. And I decide to write fan fiction, whole complete novel about my favorite story, and I post it online, and my 76 followers on Twitter are incredibly excited about it, and we talk about it, and they criticize a few points. But then IO9 picks it up, and they make fun of it. And their bazillion Twitter followers and Facebook fans make fun of it as well, because that's kind of what they're being led to do by IO9. And all of a sudden, I am inundated by people who go all the way from making fun of it to completely hate it because they've decided that it's bad. There is something inherently, really, IO9, why don't you pick on someone your own size? But, and that's what they address in the article. And they say, to quote, they, meaning fanfic writers, are not pretentious. They are not trying to claim their work is great literature. It's just fun. But why does someone who has a job doing it and is incredibly well known, why does that necessarily make them pretentious or make them claim that their work is great literature or that it's not fun because they make money from it? You can have a job that you love and make money from it, but it's still fun. So I guess my thought is, really, if you slap someone who can't defend themselves, really, you're going to do that? That's cruel and it's cowardly. But if you slap someone who can defend themselves, other than possibly being a bit stupid because they can, it's still slapping someone. Well, so I guess my point is the difference between snark and hate to me, like you said, Mark, there's that thin line there, but... What I would call good snark, with air quotes, would be when you decide to honestly critique something that you enjoy, not search out things that you dislike and trash them.
Yeah, malicious intent. Definitely. And I always say there's a thin line between snark and hate. I mean, I think a lot of people like to hide behind the word snark. They're like, oh, we're just going to create a new word now and we're going to replace it for hate. Because if we hate, well, then we might get charged with a hate crime. And so let's find a way to get around that with some little snark tape. But to continue along your thoughts there, okay, I wrote a fan fiction. I wrote it for my kids. My kids haven't actually read it because I didn't actually finish it, but I got really far and I've got all the plots and stuff. I just ran out of time. And I posted a few of the chapters that I had. It's on the U Cantina forums. It's a New Jedi Order story. It's called Relentless. I actually tied it into the books where unnamed characters like Invector Prime turn out to be my character kind of stuff. Not me specifically, but the main character. And, you know, it's there. That's the only place I've ever put it. I never went to any other fan fiction places and posted it because I didn't really want to put it in a place where everybody would just come down on it. I wanted to put it in a place where I felt more safe and secure. But now, what if IO9 grabs mine and puts it up there and rips on it? Well, I look at it like this. Right now, I've shared it with the few people that were there, and it saw, you know, like, I think, I don't even know. I'm just going to guess and say, we'll say 70 people looked at it, okay? It hasn't had anybody look at it for the last year and a half, maybe 2 years. Now, if IO9 suddenly grabbed it, and all of a sudden I'm just getting ripped on for crap and or whatever it is that's really bad about my writing style, but all of a sudden now my views, it's like shot up to 1,000, this might actually motivate me to go back to finishing it, you know? I mean, I don't know. Like, sometimes the negative attention can be good attention. I mean, I guess that's what I'm coming at. I mean, I'm 100% in Riley's camp of not picking on people, but at the same time, I don't want to be one of those that say, no, you can't have fun because that might be too close to hurting someone else's feelings. I mean, when people get hurt and they fall down, sometimes it's funny to watch them fall. Yeah, you feel bad that they got hurt, but you can't help laughing because of how funny it was when they ate it, you know?
Yes. I guess the real question to me is what's the difference between hating on a little guy versus hating on a big guy? And that's one main question that is raised by me in the article, because it seems so popular to say, well, George Lucas, you know, he's just making all that money and that makes him an evil monster. Or, well, that Michael Bay can just get away with whatever he wants. And, you know, I'm not really a huge fan of Michael Bay movies, but for those who are, good for them, they found something they enjoy. For those who aren't like me, they just don't really watch them. So why can you choose to, quote, pick on someone who's not little?
Yeah, it's almost like saying, you know, we recognize that there's an issue here, but we're going to continue to point it at the right people. But we're going to choose what's right and what's wrong based off of what you guys say.
You can hate on the right people, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a thin line, like I say. You know, it's one of those that I really think, you know, people's sensitivities are going to affect where that line lies. Like, say, you know, you grow up with a family that's, you know, abrasive and they're always kind of making that kind of humor slashing borderline racist or whatever, you know, very, very in your face kind of, you go to a church group and these people are always the people, everybody's like, what in the heck is with that family? You know, you're going to be like going to these places and being like, man, everybody's always coming down on us. But it's because you were raised in a totally different environment than the other side. And so some things that may not even be an issue for you could be very offensive to them. And yet their response to you might offend you. I mean, it's, to me, it's one of those things. It's really hard to say, well, what you're doing is wrong and what you're doing is okay, because that line, it shifts so often.
Yeah. Well, it's but kind of at the root of the issue being talking about fan fiction and fan works and the difference between professional and what isn't professional work. It's a really blurry line, honestly, you know, between what is fan work that doesn't count versus does count. Because you know what the number one best-selling book right now all this holiday season is? 50 Shades of Grey. You know what it was before it was published? Fan fiction. Twilight fan fiction. So, I mean, think about, I mean, and so
multiple lines are blurring, man.
I'm not sure even with the published book I would call it professional, but that's a whole other story.
Well, and not just the difference of determining what's professional, what's not, but in an interview with the New York Times, Chris Hardwick recently said, when asked about, you know, what can you be a nerd of, what can you be a geek
of? Oh, this is a great piece.
Chris Hardwick said, and the interviewer said, can you be...
Read the excerpt. Do you have it in front of you by any chance?
Yes, I do.
Read it. Yeah. It's just fantastic.
Well, he said, there are math nerds and computer nerds, but can you be a football nerd? And he asked a few other similar questions. And Chris Hardwick said, because nerds have often been outcasts, and I believe he means geeks and everyone else too, but New York Times doesn't know any better. Because nerds have often been outcasts, they can't now be exclusive, he said, adding, I'd be a hypocrite. So basically, are we excluding people because they're famous, because they're well known, because they're writing fanfic, or because they're not writing fanfic, or because they're wealthy? Because we are used to being the ones picked on, and to see people who are doing well with being geeks.
Because I'm a geek.
Does that possibly raise a little bit of jealousy in us to see someone who's making it as a geek, when we were the ones originally who were picked on and felt excluded?
Well, I love that.
Are we being revengeful?
Can you throw that link in the show notes? Because that New York Times, that's not an expose. It's a feature on Chris Hardwick, who's probably one of the most...
So, not revengeful, excuse me, vengeful, but is there... What are our motivations behind picking on different classes of geeks? How do we get to determine who's a geek and who's not to be picked on?
Oh, elitism. I think we just started a 2-hour conversation right now. well, it's interesting because this conversation took a very different turn than I thought it would. I'll be the first to say, and I mentioned before, we'll have it in the links. Take a listen to Andy Notko's thoughts on this, because you guys took it. It's kind of like the free speech argument where everyone, if you believe in liberty like I do, which, you know, any political party or anybody would say, yeah, liberty's good. Sounds good.
Thumbs up.
So liberty over freedom any day.
With thunderous applause. but, you know, liberty, anyone who watches Star Wars knows that tyranny, the empire is bad, liberty, good, right? That's kind of good and evil, mm-hmm. principles of liberty and freedom versus tyranny and servitude.
Well, what to me is hilarious about this article, too, is the opening part. I read partway into the interview, but the opening says, and it's making its own assumptions, for a guy whose career is built around being a nerd, the comic Chris Hardwick does not fit the stereotype. Okay, so we're stereotyping already. He's good-looking, has a girlfriend who is a model and an actress, and is not socially awkward. While these might seem like handicaps for the man who leads the formidable multimedia company called Nerdist Industries, Mr. Hardwick is committed to a radically inclusive vision of nerds. That's great. Doesn't seem like you are, sir, who were writing the article.
No. I will defend the New York Times and say I think he's speaking more of others' assumptions than making his own assumptions.
Okay. I can buy that. But still, the fact that those are the assumptions is kind of sad, and it does show as geeks or nerds, people have come a long way as far as trying not to stereotype people based on their likes and dislikes. And
and this is an article I stumbled across.
Real quick on the term of stereotyping geeks and nerds, what's the difference between a geek and a nerd to you guys? I mean, I have a distinct feeling of what the difference is. But do you guys?
I will not even try to attempt to define it.
I have a slightly different feeling with connotation with the words, but I have a feeling that it's entirely personal and not how most people would feel. For instance, in this New York Times article, I don't think they really even say geek once. They're lumping everything in as nerd. Where to me, a nerd is more someone who is incredibly knowledgeable about, say, computers and technology. And a geek to me would be someone who's more highly into fandom type activity. A geek would be someone adores Marvel, and a nerd would be someone who could take apart my computer and put it back together in 10 minutes. To me,
yeah, that's I'm a similar. To me, the nerd is more about statistics, numbers, dating, you know, stuff that requires an education higher than mine.
But again,
the
geek
geek's more about imagination, fantasy, things that don't actually exist that you really wish they did. You know?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's entirely personal, because obviously, if the New York Times writer, nerd to him fits what to me is a geek.
Yeah. Well, that's a fun thing about the English language is that words morph evolve. Meanings and evolve with who defines what to whom. So, I mean, I personally really dislike, this is just me.
Should just merge them. It should be a neek.
A gerd. I'm a gerd.
No, neek.
I'm a gerd.
It has to be neek.
See, and I always got dork a lot, which was like when you were being so geeky you
wasn't
didn't
that
care.
Like 1994? Is dork still a thing? I don't know. Is that still a thing?
It was about 94, man. I graduated in 97.
Okay. It may be a thing sometimes, but I think dork definitely has an inherently negative connotation.
Like, well, I do weird stuff, and my wife's still, you're such a dork.
Yeah. True. I'm at the point, I don't really like either term, because mainstream still... there's such a radical, not rad, there's such a intense attempt by geek and nerd culture to, and I'm going to see if I can get around with, away for the rest of the podcast of not saying the G or the N word. Wait, that didn't sound right. But you guys get it. But you guys know it. Anyway. But it seems like, yeah, I completely lost my train of thought. All right.
Well, one thing that this article says, and I think we are to some degree moving past this. It still exists, definitely. But the article goes on to say, nerds are everywhere. Governor Rick Snyder of Michigan, a Republican, campaigned for office partly on the slogan, quote, one tough nerd. President Obama calls himself a Star Trek fan or a, quote, Trekker. Nerd style has so swept up comedy that it inspired the stand-up Bill Burr to rant, I've had it with the nerds. And he says that Mr. Hardwick is well suited to our times. And that's a very interesting statement, where it's not a bad thing to really like something.
Well, you know what they say, geek is chic. I mean, I remember as I was growing up, by the time I got to high school, being a geek was no longer the bad thing. But there were still certain things that were social taboo. Like, you didn't want to openly say you cared about certain sci-fi franchises, especially around the ladies, or you weren't going to be going on any dates on any weekends. You were just going to be going and watching some sci-fi by yourself. But it's kind of like one of those things, like bringing it back. It's like, you know, when people call me a geek, I'm like, you dang right I'm a geek. I'm an Uber geek. You know what Uber means, right? Super. That's me. Super geek. This guy. And, you know, that's just one of those things. Like, I don't take it negative. When someone may mean it negative, I just laugh at them because they obviously don't know me at all, because all they've done is paid me one heck of a compliment. It's like, yeah, obviously it shows, right? Like, I don't even have to do anything and you obviously get me.
Yeah. Another thing the article says is that Mr. Hardwick is benefiting from getting in early. He started his podcasts as early as 2010.
Wait a second.
That's hilarious.
Wait a second.
That's not.
Wow. When did this start in 2011, right? Summer 2011? We're not too far behind Mr. Hardwick, other than the fact that we're not hosting an actual television show and owning a podcast network and... Yeah, well,
no,
so we're not.
But,
kind of
well,
the
it talks
team.
About his commitment to growth, but Mr. Hardwick didn't get in all that, quote, early, at least not to me anyway. 2010.
Are you kidding? Yeah.
It's earlier than some, yes. But really, he was at the forefront, as in, okay, this is becoming a thing. But at most techies, for lack of a better term, there we go, terminologizing people, and I'm just making up words now. People knew that podcasts were becoming popular, that online entertainment is becoming the way of the future. Anyway, it's some interesting things to see that this is becoming so mainstream. To me, it is, anyway. By the way, Chris Hardwick has sold his industries to Legendary Entertainment, I believe.
Creators of the Batman franchise.
Yeah, the new...
The Chris Nolan one.
Yes.
Yeah. Another sellout in a world of sellouts.
To me, it's not necessarily sellout, but similarly with the Disney Star Wars thing, it's this kind of thing becoming so mainstream. Anyway, I think it's cool.
Well... This conversation, as I said a few moments ago, took a very different turn than I thought. And I'll end this particular part of the discussion by saying this. I do think it's a significant step, and there's a reason that the IO9 article made so many waves, and that I think it was the right decision to stop publishing, that specific type of column. And I think it's a testament to a site that I usually see as very negative, especially when it comes to Star Wars. And it's an encouraging, mm-hmm. And that is an encouraging thought.
Well, I'll put it this way. I have really enjoyed some of IO9's stuff. They put out some really well-researched, really interesting articles. But as the New York Times says, quote, one reason Chris Hardwick has succeeded is that his enthusiasm appears authentic. In other words, people like his positivity, and they come back for more. And I think that that is the real thing that... people like us who are into giving our opinions should understand that most people don't want a lot of negativity. I mean, our lives can be difficult enough without having someone in our ears who's supposed to be cheering us up and entertaining us and teaching us and giving us information being incredibly negative and getting us down. So I think as entertainers, we can all take a page from Chris Hardwick's book.
Which he actually does have a book.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to say, which I find interesting. Speaking of Io9, I'm going to feature a story that's not in the show notes real quick, which just like that, I closed my show notes, which is something that only an amateur would do. I'm sure Chris Hardwick would never close his show notes.
I bet he has.
Actually, I don't think he has show notes. I don't know if you've... Have you ever listened to the Nerdist podcasts, Mark? By any
no.
chance? I mean, not family
I mean,
friendly.
I know
Let me
of
say that
them.
Up front,
I've
like right now.
It's
not particularly
chance.
Family friendly. I have listened to a couple, and he does have a genuine talent for this kind of thing.
Nice. He's like, oh, I'm just going to go up and ad lib it. You don't worry about it. I had
Speaking
some toast
of
this morning.
Yeah. Speaking of Io9, I'm going to feature a quick story, and we might talk about this later, but this is really making the rounds. George Lucas cut female X-Wing pilots out of Return of the Jedi last minute. This is an article from an EO9. Io9.
Wow.
I've heard that before.
That's right up there with him cutting a certain female senator's most controversial or most needed parts from episode 3.
Mm.
Go see the book. They're all there. Mm. They didn't cut them out of the book.
Mm. Might we say, yeah, but you, this website, I'm trying to think, I've heard it before. Like, it's a deja vu. It's the Department of Redundancy department.
Department of Redundancy. You know, real quick, we had our haunted house in a DMV, and you could see the patches where the people stood. We called them the spots of despair.
You're saying, Bethany.
Oh, I was going to point out, it's not the Department of Redundancy. It's the Department of Redundancy Department.
Aha.
Big difference.
Okay. Female X-Wing pilots were cut. The original Star Wars trilogy isn't known exactly for having a lot of roles for women, but it does turn out that the third film, Return of the Jedi, featured some female pilots in the Battle of Endor. Two of these female pilots are featured among the deleted scenes and extras from the recent Blu-ray releases, but not the two female X-Wing pilots. And curiously, we haven't seen the deleted scene featuring Vivian Chandler left, so they've got some pictures of what's featured. You can glimpse the female pilots in the briefing before the battle scene, and one of them is actually included for a split second. What's interesting is that they actually had there's one of the female pilots shown briefly, and her voice is dubbed by a male, which is interesting. Best comment, by the way, on Io9 from the very articulate and intelligent readers of Io9 is, well, how can you wear a gold bikini and effectively pilot an X-Wing, you know? So chauvinist. It was funny. That's actually reasonable commentary. I still maintain that we never really talked about this. We're gonna dedicate like a whole episode someday to my our thoughts, specifically mine, that Return of the Jedi is one of the more chauvinistic films today. And if it were a sci-fi film that were made in 2013, people would be really upset with how much they degraded the main female character. But because people always see things through like rose-tinted glasses, it's a perfect film. But yeah, and I don't know. That's a whole nother story. When we do our Return of the Jedi commentary, that'll be the entire Jabba's Palace sequence will be me pointing out how terrible.
Riley's like, everybody go get something to eat. I got this hour covered.
I got this 40 minutes covered. I'm going to be talking about the misogyny of the 1980s as represented by the gold bikini, which anyway. so I wanted to feature that real quick. This episode of the Star Wars Report does have a sponsor. It does have a new one, in fact, audible.com. I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you guys can get a free audiobook download. Now, if you listen to podcasts, you probably actually heard of Audible. They're an affiliate. They work with Amazon, and it's basically they use their own credit system to where you can get your own audiobooks once and maybe twice and maybe three or four times, depending on what plan you choose, per month. And they deliver them right to your iPhone, Android, Kindle, MP3 player, GPS, you name it. They got it. It's an amazing service. I've used them myself. Love them. And what you guys can do is do a free trial, which, by the way, the free trial costs you nothing. You can do the free trial, and it will cost you what it costs Luke Skywalker to blow up the Death Star.
That's one for you, Carl.
Well, other than other than his mentor and life changing, so I did cause that forget that metaphor. Go to audibletrial.com/Star Wars Report. Like I say, over 100,000 audiobook titles. I love audiobooks. That's usually the only way I consume them. And there's a bunch of Star Wars titles too. If you guys sign, they kick us a nice. What's very nice about it is if you guys decide to choose, they do give us a commission. And it costs you nothing extra, even if you just sign up for the free trial. Did I mention it was free? So again, head over to audibletrial.com/Star Wars Report, and we thank you for your support of the podcast.
I was just wondering real quick, while we're talking about audiobooks, with some of the Old Republic novels, the audiobook versions, do you know if the same cast who voiced the characters in the Old Republic itself, for instance, Darth Malgus's voice, Darth Awesome's voice in the trailer. Do you know if the same people voiced them for the audiobooks, either of you?
Absolutely no idea. I'll be honest.
I want to say no. I want to say they get the one guy and he just reads.
Probably, I believe it's Mark Thompson.
Changes the voices.
Yeah, I think it's Mark Thompson who does that.
Say that you are deceived, quote.
I'm not a trained monkey.
Do it.
I will not. No.
Do it.
No, you were deceived if you thought I was going to do the voice.
Oh, goodness.
You've been deceived by Riley's enjoying saying you.
It's remarkably close to Batman. He's like, you. Wait, I just did it. You were deceived. He's like,
why don't
a hero
they
can be anyone? Even a man who puts a coat over his shoulder.
So what you're saying is Darth Malgus.
Oh, that was perfect.
What you're saying is Darth Malgus was actually voiced by Batman himself.
Christian Bale, probably. Christian Bale stops by this Blur Studios. He's like,
"Hey, I'm bored."
He's all, "I'm to done the Star with Batman. Wars
I'm done with this Batman stuff." He's got the weird the British accent, which is how he does the American accent so well. And he's all like,
"I'm Batman."
Anyway, they should really do a full cast, full audio books for the Star Wars books, because they do a really good job with the ones that I've listened to so far. The sound editing is great, but they really should do a full cast. It would be a lot of fun. I do understand that it would be a lot more expensive, though.
Do you ever find yourself, though, I mean, I too find the sounds are awesome, but you ever find yourself actually focusing more on the sounds than the actual words of the story? You're like, wait a minute, I just missed that whole chapter. I was so, that little creepy sound running along the floor, whatever that was, I was looking for it.
In other words, for our friend Mark, it's probably best that they don't have a full cast.
Not everything. Not yet.
All right. let's talk about it. Let's see. Oh wow, we are trucking along in our time. We're right at 40 minutes. So I'm gonna we're gonna give our overall thoughts of Clone Wars Season 5. Jump to your emails and feedback from last week's show. And I've got another quick surprise story for you guys before we pop out of the podcast. George Lucas is not. What we're talking about. We're talking about Lucas's Clone Wars Season 5. So, let's open it up. I have no idea how to transition to this. What do you guys think of Clone Wars? Heard of the Clone Wars show? It's like this Cartoon Network. Like Saturday mornings, I think it is.
I
actually got to watch all of Season 5 in one setting.
It was I saw that, Mark.
But it was delicious.
When was that, Mark? It was 2 weeks ago? I saw you tweeting about it.
Yeah, about 2 weeks ago. Yeah, it was 2 weeks ago because I haven't watched this last week's, but the one before that ended it out.
You haven't seen Colonel Gascon?
Yeah, man. I was, you know, when Revival came out and I fell asleep in it and I was sitting there having all this trouble watching it on the little tiny computer, I was like, ah.
Like, if you were having trouble with Revival, wait.
Well, I was just having trouble with my computer. And, okay. And then once we got that taken care of, then I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. These are out of order, which was a little weird. But, yeah, you got to keep in mind, my flatmate, he's got a projector, and it's a really nice projector.
Oh, nice.
And he went out and did the iTunes thing and got me the whole season. And then, you know, he works at a Walmart, so he's able to get a discount. And he went out and got most of the – first couple seasons. We're going to start watching them from season one and work our way up to 5.
Oh, cool.
Because he was worried when we were watching 5. He's like, no, this isn't going to mess anything up for me. And I'm like, mess anything up? This is the Clone Wars. It messes everything up. Don't worry. If you don't get where it's going on, you're like everybody else. We got to wait for it over and them to tell us what the heck happened because we don't.
The Clone Wars.
So I was explaining to him how a lot of fans have gone with that route of, well, the Clone Wars is just a cartoon show set in the universe of Star Wars. And he was like, okay, I can get with that. And so he's like, you know, in this context, this is good. I'm like, yeah, it's all about a certain point of view.
Well,
but it's like about 130 inch. I mean, it's the entire wall of the living room, and it is just glorious watching the Clone Wars.
So is it on HD?
I mean,
has he got like,
you know,
that
you,
on an HD?
You guys went and saw it in the Celebration, right?
Yeah, we saw
episodes on the big screen.
Yeah, we saw the whole. Actually, we saw last season finale, and then they put Revival. So it was the three Darth Maul episodes all back to back, kind of cut together like a movie. And we saw it on the digital cinema monster size screen. It was great. But
yeah,
you know, if nothing else, Clone
experience.
Wars. What you reminded me is Clone Wars doesn't really matter what order you watch it in.
No,
not really. I mean, there are a couple specific plot threads. But really only one. I would say this, the Darth Maul stuff is the only thing that's important that you see in order. All the other, as long as you just watch each arc separately, it doesn't really matter. Like if you, think of the deserter back in season 2. It's a great plot about the clone that deserted after Geonosis, and he's got the very attractive pink Twi'lek wife, which, hey, anybody would desert. And so, you know, but that's that a great plot line. Dropped. We got the zombie episodes, season 2, which was kind of the follow-up where we returned to Geonosis, some great battle scenes. We saw Barriss Offee, a Padawan that we'd not seen much of. It's very fascinating to see her and her master, to see a new Jedi return to the Clone Wars that we didn't really know a whole lot about. Plot dropped.
No, we saw
General Krell. General Krell, fantastic five-part of last season where it really delved into the depths of why the clones do what they do and what is free choice. And they turned on a Jedi Master. A Jedi Master who was their direct commander. They made the individual choice to kill him. And that in its of itself proves that there could be clone units that did not execute Order 66. Big, significant, huge plot within this time period. Plot dropped.
It's funny about that, though, because
I'm depressing you, but my point stands is that this show, as fantastic as it is, Clone Wars, best show on television, if you're a Star Wars fan. It's fantastic stuff. Even season 5, which has kind of been up and down for people. Fantastic show. Horrendously guilty of not carrying one plot to the next. And they have a few times referenced previous seasons. But other than they're kind of isolated.
Do you know what The Clone Wars is? The Clone Wars is a Tales of series in TV form.
Aha! Tales of the Clone Wars.
Are you saying that
this
like
week,
it's
something new?
So it's snippets of story within
a larger context,
which is weird because I love the Tales of books, but in the context of a serialized television series, I kind of want to think Battlestar Galactica, where you start the season and you end the season with a huge character progression, and they feel like different characters.
Well, let me ask you this then: what to you makes the difference between the Tales of books and a Tales of television series? What makes you want an overarching storyline for a television series, but not necessarily want that for the Tales of books? Do you think that each has its place in books, but we don't have as much Star Wars on film, so you want an overarching storyline? If we had 8 different Star Wars television/movie series, would you be okay with the Clone Wars the way it is?
That was four questions.
No, it's mainly the same question rephrased.
Okay, gotcha.
Is what makes the difference, and then
off the top of my head, because I'm trying to define it. Off the top of my head, it's two things that I can think of. Just did I mention the top of my head? One would be because of the medium, where Star Wars I think is best and most entertaining on a visual medium. I enjoy the films, enjoy the television series. That's what I enjoy most is when it's in that visual medium. So when the visual medium comes on screen, I still kind of associate it in my head with the films. So when the Clone Wars is doing these three, four, five parters, like the Krell arc, like the Darth Maul one, I'm immediately connecting it to the films. I'm thinking, Darth Maul's back. I think of the Duel of Fates in Episode One. It's very referential. When I read a Star Wars book, I'm more detached from the films, and I enjoy the stories for what they are, set within the Star Wars universe, but I don't really have the same expectation of style. And the fact that the Clone Wars is the executive producer is George Lucas. He's the direct influencer of it. Mm-hmm. What I do kind of expect is that kind of referential thing, and that's my favorite part about the Clone Wars is when it really gets in depth with the films and connects back and forth with. Like I'm like, wait a second. The Krell arc told me, wait a second, there might have been clone units that didn't execute Order 66, which is kind of my ultimate fantasy in my head. I'm like, what if certain Jedi survived with their clone units?
Not just managing to survive by killing them or escaping.
And here's the word I was looking for. That's what captures my imagination with Star Wars. So I think that's why I really like the Tales of books and maybe not so much the way how disjointed the Clone Wars series is. Mm-hmm. But having said that, it may not be as disjointed as I sound talking about it now. I was kind of being over the top.
We're pointing out one side of the Clone Wars.
Yeah, well, I was being kind of over the top in my description of the problem, pointing out each different arc that I really liked, and then you know it was gone. but it's true; those are the things that do happen.
I guess here's the main difference for me: one, the Tales of books, you know, I could sit down and read in a week, easily, and you can't do that with the Clone Wars. To me, the Clone Wars, because it is a long and ongoing television series, because it's that long form, it feels like it should be more Battlestar Galactica,
although,
more supernatural, more anything along those lines.
But it just occurred to me, some of my favorite television shows and entertainment properties of all time are ones that I went back and watched that I could see several episodes in a row and get through it all in a couple weeks. Like Battlestar, it was literally maybe 6 weeks, all four seasons. Boom. And so
that's how any TV show should be done. I mean, once you've watched the run, you need to go back and do your Netflix or TV on DVD, whatever. But you owe it to yourself to watch it how it was meant to be presented to you. I mean, I don't think the writers are like, well, let's write a story that will put them on the edge of their seats for one whole week, and then we'll give them a little tidbit here. I mean, I don't see stories getting written that way. I mean, it's more to me like they have a story arc. And they plot out that arc, and then in this episode, some of that story arc is exposed. This one a little more, then a little more, then a little more. By the fifth or so, you're starting to see a bigger picture. And then at the end of the season or series, you get the whole picture, and you're like, wow, that was a great ride.
I see that, Mark, but I don't really think that that's the case with the Clone Wars. And I'll use another television show as an example. For instance,
I actually agree with you.
The television show House. It is an 8-season-long TV series that's very episodic in that it's a Dr. House is a diagnostic physician who is brought a case, and with his brilliant mind and sarcastic sense of humor solves it, charms us all or disgusts us all with his wit, and moves on. And it's a fascinating television series because it's like a detective show, only you're a doctor and you're trying to find a disease. So there's that aspect of the show, incredibly episodic, but it does have an ongoing plot thread that is dropped from time to time, but people move from job to job, so people leave the show and other people enter the show. Some of his friends, some of his best friends die, so there are ongoing plot threads to this series. But I still think that the best television series have focused more on the ongoing plot threads and less on the episodic nature of it. And that may just be me, and I'm pretty picky about what television shows I watch, so I don't watch that many. I'm not really a TV watcher. But
well, I get when you're done.
Oh. So I guess in a way that's the difference for me. For the Tales of books for me are one tiny part of an overall large book series, because you have things like the legacy of the Force series, or even the fate of the Jedi, which you could complain went on too long. But to me, the Tales of was a small part, and there's nothing like that right now with Star Wars on the big screen. You will have that when the movies come out, but I feel like the Clone Wars is devoting so much of the Star Wars energy, you might say, on making stories that you could drop into a bucket and it wouldn't make a difference. You might enjoy them, but it wouldn't make a difference.
Well, I think of, like, Star Trek, okay? We're going to talk about the Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. The Next Generation kind of seems like how, you know, they were all episodic, but they didn't quite always tie in. Occasionally, you get, like, a to be continued. But then you'd have, like Natasha Yar when she left the show. So you would have these certain situations that would happen that, like, from that point on, that person was gone. So there was a somewhat continuity. But then comes Deep Space Nine, set after Star Trek Next Generation, which if you're ever watching Next Generation in the last season, you're just plugging along, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's over. It's like the episode before the last episode, you would be like, okay, there's probably another episode tying into what's going on with the character Ro and her relationship with Picard, because they built that up. But it was like, no, then they got word that we're canceling the show and they gave you the finale and it was all done. Whereas Deep Space Nine, it was kind of like the first two seasons felt like they were, you know, that one-off kind of feel, but they kind of all tied up. And then by the time you got to the fifth and sixth seasons, you realize that everything that was going on in the first two seasons was tying everything together for a major plot line on the whole Dominion War at the end. And they concluded that. They actually were able to write it out and do their finish. And so, like, for me, I like Deep Space Nine more because it's got that overall continuity. It felt like it was actually working better and it didn't feel like that one-off. Granted, that doesn't mean that I didn't enjoy Star Trek Next Generation any more or less, but I definitely like Deep Space Nine more for the attention to that overall story, that there was more of that overall story and less of the one-shot episodes. But now you take something like Supernatural, and they do something similar, but when they do their one-off episodes feel more like their first two seasons and how the story was then, because the story progressed to the point where they can't go back to that type of relationship they had in the first two seasons. So it's interesting to see how the writers and the producers and stuff work that aspect of the two versions of the story, the short story and the long overall story.
Here, in a way, seems the difference. What The Next Generation failed to do, Deep Space Nine evolved as a TV series to do. What other monster of the week shows have failed to do, Supernatural evolved past its first two seasons to do, but the Clone Wars hasn't, and it's five seasons in.
Yeah, and I know we all know they're season six, but I really don't know if they're ending it. Or...
I do like Star Trek: The Next Generation. I watched most of it when I broke my ankle, but I kind of petered off, and I never even finished it. Because there was no ongoing plot line. I figured, I've seen a bunch of good episodes and I've enjoyed it, but there's nothing really at the end for me to see, because there is really no end. No end as far as story plot goes.
Yeah.
I made sure to catch it.
Well, and I know that's been a fear for people like Nathan, you know, of, well, how far is this going to go if we don't have a clear, concise idea of where it's going to end?
you'll know that. Season six will continue on like this, and then all of a sudden we have the last three episodes of season six, and it's going to be the last season of the Clone Wars, and it's going to be Ahsoka dies, and everything blows up, and then it's the end. Hope you had a good time watching the Clone Wars. TTYL,
y'all.
See, I'm
fine for plots getting left. Like, okay, was it Revival? We did not see anything about what was going on with Asajj and Obi-Wan. Now, as long as they go back and they finish that and they kind of tell that story, I'm okay with that. What I don't like is, say, Death Troopers, where that book ends and certain main two characters are missing their very important ship and we have no reason or story as to how they got it back. You know, I think I'm more upset when they do the little one-offs and they leave a plot line that's big or something like that wide open and have no intention of going back. Or, you know, when it's tragic and it gets cut, you know, they're like, oh, well, we're just going to cancel the show. But, you know, Firefly, I'm looking at you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking of a television series that actually had an ongoing plot thread, it was Firefly. It was very episodic in some cases, from what I've heard. Riley and I need to watch it. But ongoing series, and it culminated in the movie, which definitely had one singular plot line.
Wow. Excellent. Oh, fantastic discussion, guys. And we're coming to the end of our hour. It's getting late here on the East Coast, so we're going to wrap up. But we do have some emails that I want to feature, and it will be ongoing discussion about the Clone Wars. It returns in February, I believe it is. January, February. And we'll keep you guys updated as we go. It wasn't really as much as a Season 5 discussion, but it was more of an overall discussion, which is probably more of a testament to Season 5 than anything else. I just want to do a quick roundup. We had the opening episode, which I thought was fantastic. Fantastic. Oh, really, yeah. Loved the Darth Maul stuff.
Definitely.
But then we had the Birth of the Rebellion, not Birth of the Rebellion arc.
Onderon
arc, and then we had the Young Jedi arc, and then
I really liked that one.
And Young Jedi I enjoyed, but certainly not as
I enjoyed it, but for different reasons.
Yeah, sure, for different reasons. That's a good way to put it. And then, of course, now we are two episodes into the droid episodes with Colonel Gascon, which Bethany just finished the last episode today. Mark, you have yet to see the very last episode, but you got a couple weeks to do so. So I wouldn't be into
D Squad form up.
Yeah, Steven Stanton did a great job of.
Yeah.
Steven Stanton did a great job of voicing this character. That's quite a funny / irritating little guy. But he's endearing in his own way. I feel like this last episode could have been condensed to a small part of an episode. They pretty much, the opening sequence was quite amazing with the crystals floating through space. But after that, it was kind of like, let's wander around.
Don't spoil
it
for Mark.
20 minutes.
Although, well, the last episode on Star Wars.
The end of the world, if I get spoiled, though.
In the interview with writer Brent Feedman, they talk about what would it be like to do an episode about nothing. So they're upfront about it. It's a very out of the box, unusual finale, and Mark, you'll see it. But some people really hate it. Some people defend it. I'm kind of either way. I don't really hate it. Didn't think it was the best either. But certainly, I like the character of Colonel Gascon. But I really think it was something Jimmy Mack said on the Forcecast last week. Fantastic. Their Clone Wars roundtable of these was actually very good, and I liked hearing it because he had the idea of. Wouldn't it be really cool to go way out there a la Wall-E and just have an episode with just astromech droids, no dialogue, 22 minutes, no dialogue, just see if you could pull it off. That would be kind of cool.
See,
I'd watch that.
I think it could be done. The question is, would it really be done well? Because this last episode, I felt the pacing was off.
Couldn't you just
really
envision if 3PO had some kind of vocabulator issue and he could only talk in Whistler's little? You could just see it now, like R2 flicking
forms of communication.
The downside, though, is how do you translate that joke? Now, speaking of droids, I want to know real quick. I got Nathan's opinion. In the in the Young Jedi arcs, the lightsaber construction droid, did you guys get the feeling? Because, okay, he was like at least 1,000 years old or 100 years old. I mean, he'd been around for a long time. But
well,
did you guys get the feeling that he was constructed after the Sith species, like his head?
I don't know. I mean, we know he's at least 900 years old because, you know, that's had Yoda's lightsaber.
True.
So that throwaway. When 900 years old you reach, look as good, you will not, unless you're a droid, in which case you'll be
fashion
fine.
A lightsaber this well, you will not.
Yep. Let's see. I want to jump to email to an email we got. This is from Christopher. In reference to last week's episode, just wanted to drop you guys a line regarding this episode of your podcast, talking about episode 72. First off, I want to thank you guys for giving an entire, or half at least, of the discussion to the upcoming Star Wars film and who should be the composer for it. I'm grateful to see and hear film music getting in the spotlight on film-related podcasts. Now, I will say I disagree with a few of your points. I don't think John Williams will be back. I'm fairly certain that he's done with Star Wars and wouldn't be surprised to see him retire soon, as devastating to us as that would be. Secondly, unless it's going to be a very dark and moody a la Star Wars 1313, Hans Zimmer would hardly be my first choice, as much as I love his work. Also, Alan Silvestri? Really? Really? Great composer, but I think he's a bit on the nose. I do agree that Michael Giacchino is the most logical pick for many, many reasons. I I definitely could see this happening. And while I love many of Giacchino's film scores, his work for the Medal of Honor series remains my favorite work of his and the most John Williams-like. If he did do the upcoming Star Wars, I think he'd be very faithful to John Williams, but would definitely add his own voice, probably more faithful than he was to the established sound of Star Trek. Because, of course, Giacchino did the recent Star Trek film, which, by the way, that would be hilarious if Giacchino actually did
it. I know.
It would almost be as hilarious as J.J. Abrams doing the Star Wars. All right, he's got one more paragraph. FYI, we had a very good discussion about this topic on our podcast, The Soundcast, right around the time the announcement was made. Of course, many details have come out since then, but we discussed quite a few other composers, some not so well known to the general public, and we'd love to see the score of any of the upcoming Star Wars films. If you care to listen, you'll also find some clips from those various composers so you can get a feel of their style. So he sends a link. We'll put that link in the show notes so you guys can take a listen to that episode of the Track Sounds of the Soundcast podcast at tracksounds.com. Suffice it to say, while there is truly no replacement for John Williams, there are quite a few out there who would come in and do a great job in their own right. Thanks for all the hard work on the podcast, Christopher. Christopher Coleman of tracksounds.com. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the email, Christopher. I agree with you pretty much wholeheartedly on all the points. And I it's interesting because I got... what's the word? Chastised?
Challenged? Flamed.
Challenged a little bit by friend of the show Steve Glosson on Twitter. He was kind of going after me on my over the top love of Hans Zimmer.
And all hail Hans Zimmer!
Bow before Zimmer.
No, I'm a Hans Zimmer enthusiast. I really enjoy his soundtracks, and I think a lot of people think of Hans Zimmer and they think
kneel before Hans,
and they don't realize he has very diverse skill, and he's able to do things like Gladiator. Wow, I'm sitting here defending Hans Zimmer again, aren't I? But you know, I'm not. When I say Hans Zimmer would make a good composer, I think he's very talented, and I'll be the first to admit he would be tonally very different. But I don't think he'd necessarily be dark, as you point out, Christopher. Because he did Batman and Pirates of the Caribbean, I think he certainly have the ability to not go so dark. And
that and Pirates as a soundtrack has some really lighthearted, upbeat, and in some places, frankly, silly pieces of music.
So he's certainly able to do it, but
able to do it, but different, I think. And I think that's what Christopher's picking up on.
Sure.
And I agree with that. However, I will point out that it's a matter of taste, and since we like his style, perhaps more than Christopher and Steve, perhaps not.
Yeah.
We would be more open to that difference because we enjoy it. I do think, in a way, Giacchino would possibly make a closer to a Williams-sounding soundtrack. But I'm not sure that that's entirely the best thing. I mean, there is a major difference between the original and the prequel trilogy soundtracks.
Sure, I mean, there are very few vocal tracks in the original trilogy, whereas you go to the prequels, you have Battle of the Heroes, you have Duel of the Fates, you have these huge choral. I mean, listen to the Episode 3 soundtrack, and it sounds like you're listening to something from Lord of the Rings. It sounds dark.
Yes.
And I don't think I don't think a lot of the conventional wisdom is that it can't be someone who will put their own stamp on. It's got to be someone who's true to John Williams' vision. And I don't think that's true. I would be fine for using some of the same Star Wars theme but a very different style.
Yeah, I guess that's why I'm open to Hans Zimmer, because I know that he would do a good job with the soundtrack. I do think it would be different though.
Why, Bethany, can Hans Zimmer do no wrong? Why are you such a blind lover of Hans Zimmer?
I'm saying is, because I enjoy his music, even if it's different than John Williams, I will still most likely enjoy it because I like almost all of his music.
Bethany,
I do think that Giacchino, in a way, does make a more logical choice. If you're looking for someone who will be completely true to John Williams, Giacchino may be the better man for the job, if that's what you're looking for. But I'm not really sure that that's what they will be looking for. I mean, who knows what kind of thematic elements the new Star Wars films will take.
Bethany, just because you like the Pirates of the Caribbean score doesn't mean that Hans Zimmer has to do it. Bethany, you should... Anyway, no, right, Mark, you had something.
Yeah, well, I mean, it makes me stop and ask the question, when John Williams was hired, do you think they said, hey, John, we want you to come over here, we got this movie, maybe even three, but we want you to do John Williams. John Williams, this sucker up. I mean, to me, it's like, well, they said, come here, we got this thing, let's make music for Star Wars. I mean, we get so hung up in, well, it's got to be true to John Williams. It's like, well, no, it's just got to be true to Star Wars. I think I will be happy if it has that same feel to it. And I think that we attribute that to being like John Williams, but I don't know. It's just one of those things where when I think of John Williams, I think epic music. When I think Hans Zimmerman, I think epic music. There are a lot of different composers out there that when I think of who they are and the musics that I love of their stuff, I'm just like, yeah, you know, I mean, when I listen to certain ones, I'm trying to think, like, what kind of scene would this be? You know, I mean, on our Facebook page, I posted some up there that I was saying, you know, depending on how it was played, when it was played with the strings, I was like, well, that sounds more like Pirates of the Caribbean. But on the piano, I was like, man, that would be a cool type of song for like the New Jedi Order, from like, you know, an outside the temple kind of look at some of them on a parade ground or something, you know. It's just one of those things where different music elicits different emotional responses for me. And that, to me, I think is what's key, you know, it, capturing that emotional response that feels Star Wars.
Yes.
Yeah, and we'll think about it this way. If after the original trilogy is over, it's years in the future, and if let's just say they're not going to do it, but just say they're adapting Star Wars Legacy, the Legacy comics. Great story in and of themselves. They do have a very Star Wars feel. Love those comics. But you couldn't run the Imperial March or something. You know, you would have to have a different kind of music to match the tonal change of the story.
Hold on just a sec. You could, in the right aspect, when Cade Skywalker, quote unquote, maybe joins the Sith, the second he dons the Darth Vader pants and he starts walking around with the Sith, that could be your time to slide in
March. And don't misunderstand me, Mark. I think that you would definitely want those references and that core still there, but you want to avoid a clone of the original trilogy soundtrack. And so it's
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
And again, I do think that Giacchino would probably sound more like John Williams. But it sound more like traditional Star Wars. But see, I'm not sure that we're going with traditional Star Wars here. And I do want to be open-minded to a different feel of music. Because I do like many different kinds of music.
Who did the X-Men soundtrack?
I'm not sure.
X-Men.
But I do want to point out, you know, I do hope that as Star Wars fans, we can be open-minded to a new feel of movie as well as a new feel of music. And if we stick too closely with the so-and-so must direct, so-and-so must act in, so-and-so must do the music, panic attack.
Well, you fall in the same trap people did.
Mindful of your expectations, so you must be young Padawan.
It must, this and this must happen, and if it's anything different, I won't enjoy it.
But is different bad? If Giacchino must direct, because he will.
No! That's not how I had it all envisioned in my head!
Must we have that in order for it to be good and for us to enjoy it? Not necessarily.
Well, I'm sure there's a contingency of fans that are saying yes, while the other half are like, no, not really.
Right, yeah. And see, I would be happy, because Giacchino does, to me, make a whole lot of sense to be the one to do the music. And I love his soundtracks.
Interesting. Side note before we close, the composer of X-Men First Class, which was directed by Matthew Vaughn, who is the kind of front runner for people speculating that he'll be the one to direct the next Star Wars film, the composer of that film was Henry Jackman, who is known for working, he's working on the upcoming G.I. Joe Retaliation. He did work for X-Men First Class. He did work for The Dark Knight as well. He did work for The Holiday, which is a film I'm familiar with. So he's worked. Wait a second. The Holiday is a great soundtrack. Guys, bear with me for a second while I pull this up. Bethany, entertain the people. I'm going to.
Entertain the people? Wow, it's been a while since.
Ladies and gentlemen, juggling Bethany!
Yes.
Oh my gosh, she's throwing 30 balls into the air! And a chair! This girl's got talent!
What I do hope, kind of like we discussed in the last episode, though, for anyone who does the new Star Wars, I really hope that they don't just let the themes fade into the background. Anything but that. And now I'm falling into that trap.
Wait for it. Wait for it. Guys, this is why I do research while recording the podcast, while awkwardly making you guys talk on the fly without warning you. Henry Jackman is a composer I've never heard of outside of X-Men First Class, but he's in the music department and has assisted in various roles. I don't have all the details in front of me, but through IMDb, he has assisted producing the soundtrack for the film The Holiday, which is a Christmas romantic comedy, which was scored by Hans Zimmer. Also, Henry Jackman was a producer of some kind, was involved in the soundtrack creation of Batman The Dark Knight, composed by Hans Zimmer.
Riley Hans Zimmer Blanton.
It's all speculation at this point. Who knows? Mark, I think you're muted. I don't know if you're making a comment or... All right.
I was leaving it for you to edit through. I'm like, it's Riley Hans Zimmer Blanton.
Guilty as charged. Guilty. So I probably went back to square one. What are your thoughts on Star Wars Report? That brings this episode of the Star Wars Report to the close. Episode 73 is in the can. We're pre-recording. So I've got the music bedded behind me as we go into our closing comments. Guys, great discussion on the Clone Wars, great discussion on film score, great discussion on the fan community and fan fiction. I really enjoyed this episode.
Snark!
Exactly. So, yeah, guys, if you are interested in anything we've talked about in this particular episode, your thoughts on how much Riley blindly loves Hans Zimmer... Or how much?
And I think he's brainwashed me as well. Yeah.
Or how much we're right or wrong about the fan fiction community, or your thoughts on Clone Wars Season 5 so far. You can there are a great number of ways that you can contact us. The most straightforward is like Christopher did, StarWarsReport@gmail.com. Nice and easy to remember. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Star Wars Report, and of course Facebook.com/StarWarsReport, where you can find a picture of Mark's flooded studio. Or previously flooded studio, amongst many other great things. Talk to fellow listeners of the Star Wars Report. Also, going off the top of my head, but of course, you know, you find everything, links to everything at StarWarsReport.com. Again, huge thanks to our brand new sponsor, Audible.com. And we really, really, hey guys, check them out. Cost you nothing. Sign up for the free trial. It's a good way to support the show without costing you a penny. Sign up for the free trial, audibletrial.com/StarWarsReport, or if you go to StarWarsReport.com, there's a little button on the side link right there over on the right. You can leave us a voicemail, either record it and attach it as an MP3, give us your thoughts. We like reading your comments, but listening to them is even more fun to actually hear your voices. And another super easy way to do is just go to StarWarsReport.com. Down on the right, you'll see a little widget, a little pop-up that lets you record a voicemail, listen back, check it, see if you like it, then hit the submit button. Bam! Super, super easy way to call us up. And who knows, maybe we'll get a call in line at some point to get some discussion going on in the episode. Let's see. Also, mailing list continues to grow. Weekly updates, roundup of what's going on over at StarWarsReport.com. You can find that at StarWarsReport.com/mailing list. And also, when we do future events, Star Wars Celebration Europe, we'll see. I doubt it. But, you know, in future events, special meetups, things like that, notification on new projects, getting feedback, that will all be in the future being stuff that we collect from the mailing list. So join the folks who have joined us over at the Star Wars Report mailing list. Have I forgotten anything, Bethany? I think I've mentioned everything.
I believe so.
Again, anything and everything Star Wars Report can be found at StarWarsReport.com. I'm Riley Blanton. You can follow me on Twitter personally, where we tweet out, where I tweet out at the Riley Guy. Bethany, go. You want to give it's your chance for a plug. Plug away.
You can find me on Twitter at ALNWin. No, I'm not going to spell it on this podcast episode. And you can also find me on Facebook, Bethany Blanton.
Cool. All right. So throwing out, and Mark, the logical one.
Hey, you can always find me at IllogicalRogue2 at Twitter, and I believe if you type that in Facebook, you can probably find me there. Though if you are finding me on Facebook, just let me know you're a Star Wars fan, and I'll know to go ahead and say, hey, you're not a Mafia Wars person, because that was a mistake when I first got on Facebook.
You're not a... You're not a Farmville fellow. Exactly. Yeah, you can find me on Facebook as well. I've got a public account. You can subscribe there. Send me a friend request. Always like listeners. I do post Star Wars stuff, post Civil Air Patrol, cadet stuff, post usually the boring things that go on in my life, like the Advanced Pararescue Course. Yeah, fun stuff like that.
Yeah, if you're following me, you better be ready for some geek stuff, because I don't say I'm an uber geek for nothing.
Exactly. Yeah, Spider-Man and everything. So yeah, that's we're all over the internet. We're all over the internet.
Follow me. So just prepare for a combination of many different things, including random motivational thoughts and things like sailing.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving.
That's true. Our sailing trip.
And a very itty bitty bitty little tiny bit of smart.
And we need to Mark, it's at the end of the show, but I gotta tell you, man, this last Sunday, maybe we'll talk about it off air too, but and for the folks still listening who haven't tuned out because like, yeah, they're giving the plugs. Like, you guys that are still listening with the music going, you're getting an exclusive here. I checked it off my bucket list. I'd always wanted to do it. I thought I would do it like way in the future. There's a limited screenings of all three extended edition Lord of the Rings in theaters around the country. We went to the local theater, Fayetteville, Georgia. Went to the Tinseltown, as it is known.
Awesome.
And we watched.
Hey, we have a Tinseltown over here.
12 and a half hours of our
12
day.
Hours and 45 minutes, to be precise.
Showed up 11 o'clock that morning and sat our haunches down in the theater seats, grabbed a Taco Bell cantina bowl, and we were gone.
Nice!
And man, was that an experience. I've never... It's odd because it's a lost art of that kind of storytelling. Because as we all know, the extended Lord of the Rings, it's a complex but beautiful story about friendship and redemption. I mean, probably the best theater experience I've ever had. It was fantastic.
Awesome.
And I thought I would have a headache. Bethany was... I'll be the first to admit, I was hesitant. I'm like, 12 and a half. Man, but I didn't really have anything else going on that Sunday.
I'm not
going
to get these hours back.
But I didn't have anything going on that Sunday, and you know, it was time well invested. We went and saw it with
Bethany's like, Riley, who are we kidding? You read all your books in audiobook. It's not like you have a lot of time where you're just sitting around. You can come and do this.
Yeah, exactly. So it was. I mean, Mark, it was a great experience.
Oh, it was amazing
because I've never followed. I've never sat down and embraced and followed a story. That's 12 and a half hours. It's just never happened.
Yeah,
and it's a unique experience and something that, honestly, I would recommend if they do it again. And so it's all in prep for The Hobbit. Sadly, Bethany and I are not going and seeing The Hobbit tonight, nor this week. It'll have to be next week when we get
and
back.
The cry of despair that echoes.
Yeah, when we
like
get...
the ill-famed no.
That was the kind of the yodel no.
Yes.
No. No, that was that. I think that was
the
direct quote of Darth.
You know what? All knowing aside, Walking Dead, Rick Grimes' latest. No, 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 no. Oh man, that's the best.
Okay, enough with the other franchises. Hey, if we see it maybe next week or the week after, Mark, I know you're planning to probably see it in the next couple weeks. Who knows? Maybe after the new year, we'll do a Hobbit review. Just because I'm that big a fan of Tolkien's work, it's masterpiece. If it's anywhere near as good as Lord of the Rings, it's going to be something we want to talk about. Kind of like Avengers, kind of like Dark Knight. We like to delve outside of the realm of Star Wars on occasion.
The Hobbit
and
report.
Just as a reminder, or actually new information for new listeners that we have, is sometimes the three of us will go on after the credits of our show, so to speak, and have a discussion about something entirely different, like the Avengers or like the Hobbit. Just something
we need
love,
to bring that back.
If you like that kind of thing, you can tune in. And if you don't, you'll still have your hour show in its normal format.
I think this might have
Star
to
Wars.
Like with the hot. I like it. We need to bring that back because I like expanding the realm of geekdom, but I don't necessarily want to start five podcasts. So it's fun to do those post discussions for those of you who like to stick around after the credits. Although the Hobbit, that may have to be a special unto itself because we could probably go for 2 hours on it.
Yeah, if you see a 2.5 or 3 hour episode of the Star Wars Report. Don't have a heart attack yet.
But we should bring
a regular show.
A buddy,
with stuff
maybe
after the credits.
Maybe bring a buddy from Middle Earth Network in early January sometime, and
That would be fun.
I'll break it down or something like that. For you guys who, but basically, I love plugging other podcasts. This is like the longest in music ever.
I know.
I love plugging fellow podcasters.
I've probably cycled through the
4-minute song like 3 times now. But no, I'd like to plug other podcasters. Father Roderick of SQPN.com. It's a Catholic priest, does great content, and he has a SQPN Secrets of the Hobbit where he does a spoiler-free review right now. You can go find it, thehobbit.sqpn.com. Encourage you guys to go listen to it. And that's something I want to do, maybe feature our own plugs of fellow podcasters and fellow Star Wars fans doing great work.
Indeed.
All right, that wraps this episode of Star Wars Report. It's in the can. Thank you guys for if you've stuck around this long. We really appreciate it. Again, we thank you for your support, whether it's just listening to the show, whether it's your iTunes reviews, whether it's your email feedback, or whether it's something like Audible, if that's financial, any of the kind of support you get. It's what keeps us going and enjoying what we do now 73 episodes into this this epic saga that has become StarWarsReport.com. So thanks for listening, and we will be back next week, although we may not record. It depends on Christmas schedules, but I'll have something in the feed for you guys next week, one way or the other. We'll be making this plan. Stay tuned on our Facebook and Twitter, and you will find out some of the cool stuff we've got going on. So that wraps it up, puts that episode of the Star Wars Report in the can. Remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
But we're cloning them. It's all good.
It's all good. Mark, you can stop.
It's all good in the galaxy. Far away.
Audacity now, if you would.
Huh? Who?
And then.
Oh. As the wave. Stopping.